You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now, let's get on with today's show. Molly Wills is an entrepreneur at heart with a passion towards the arts, fashion, travel, and most of all, empowering and mentoring girls. She founded the Waverly Project in 2012 after being inspired by many female mentors in her life that helped her realize her own creative passions. The Waverly Project connects young girls and women through creative projects and experiences called tours, with a mission to empower girls to find their passions, build confidence, and think globally. The Waverly Tours are designed by Wills for elementary school girls to high school-aged girls. Each tour is led by Molly or another female role model that shares her story on topics ranging from business, culture, cuisine, to fashion, and leads the girls into a creative project that inspires and educates. Each girl must sign a code of kindness that Molly has created to foster a positive and respectful community. Born in Baltimore, Maryland, Wills has established new roots in Greenwich, Connecticut, where she currently resides. After graduating from the College of William and Mary, Molly started her career in art and fashion, with 2 years at the Polo Ralph Lauren Fashion House. Molly's passion for travel and service led her to work closely with organizations such as eSchool for Girls in New York City, South African Orphanage, and Empowers Africa Foundation, all of whom she still supports today with her Waverly Girls. The Waverly Project is based at the Women's Club of Greenwich and offers weekly tours in Greenwich, Connecticut, in addition to travel tours that take place at local businesses and studios. Waverly has hosted pop-up tours in New York City, London, and South Africa, with plans to expand to other cities. Wills also founded the Waverly Foundation to provide resources and support for girls around the world. Waverly raises money to provide Waverly tours to girls in underserved communities, as well as for orphan girls in Africa and other parts of the world.
Well, welcome, Molly. It's so great to have you here today, and I'm excited to connect with you and to find out a little bit more about yourself and the amazing work you're doing. So if you can start just by telling us a little bit about what it is you're doing and what's brought you to this point in your life with your career.
Sure. Hi, thank you for having me. I started the Waverly Project in 2012, and it's sort of a culmination of things that I struggled with / experienced through growing up. And I'd say like mid high school to my early career in the world, I had an amazing array of mentors and role models, and they were cheering me on and building me up little by little. And it wasn't until I was in the world after graduating college that I saw that whole sort of transformation process and realized how significant it was and is still. And so through that experience, and then, working in the world and having a corporate job that was my dream job in fashion, I started to have conversations with girls my age, women that were older than me, and I just saw this need for a space that is totally committed to building confident, creative, empowered girls. And so I decided to quit my job in fashion totally out of the blue. I was 25. So I had worked in that job for 2 years. And I started babysitting to make money. And while I was babysitting, I reached out to a few different mentors of mine and I said, hey, I have this idea. Can you help me sort of piece it together? I had an educator on my team, a psychologist on my team, and an artist on my team. And we sort of like through conversations pieced together this concept that is now the Waverly Project. And it is all about empowering girls through creativity and empowering them to connect with their gifts and exposing them to different things like writing, architecture, fashion, photography, anything you could possibly imagine, gardening, cooking, baking. And through that whole process, we've created this workshop that really allows girls to be present and in the moment and experience these senses, you know, these things that are sort of just like, they're so important in developing who you are. But I think because of social media and because of technology, we've sort of focused on like the seeing sense, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, smelling and touching and listening. So I incorporate all of those different things in our workshops, and I really have seen it sort of, it's just brought in a whole new sort of experiential thing for girls. And so, yeah, that's
amazing. What age group are you primarily working with?
So we start in first grade.
Wow.
I would say my sweet spot is second, third, and fourth. Mm-hmm. First graders are young, mm-hmm. but they are still, I say this all the time. It's the biggest learning, curve for, or the thing that has opened my eyes, the most is that starting young is really important at this point in time in our culture. And that surprised me because I was sort of stuck on older and, mm-hmm. and building this out from like a middle school, high school point of view. And I was redirected to just go young. And I am so, so passionate about that at this point in time, because I think we have to get to our kids young.
Yeah. And I believe in that as well. And I'm so excited that that's the age group you work with, because I don't know if you've heard the statistic, but a girl's self-esteem peaks at 9 years of age. And yep. That's what I have right now. My oldest is just turned 9 and she's a third grader. And I can start to see the shift already at this age of where she's becoming more socially aware.
Yep.
But she has this ability and this presence. And I'd like to think that some of it comes from me helping her, where she can just be herself. So we were in Boston this past weekend to celebrate her birthday. That was her gift from us. We like to do experience gifts. And we're in the middle of this huge science museum, and there's this music playing, and she just started rocking out. And these, she's not a dancer, and these moves and just moving her body to the music. And people were just watching her and smiling, and some were kind of surprised. But I was so proud because, you know, I myself think I'm pretty confident, but I would never be able to do that in that moment. And I just sat there and watched it, and I looked at my husband, and I was like, I just hope she can, that she never loses that right there, what you see. And this, that age group that you're working with is so amazing, because they are still in that realm of magical thinking.
Correct.
And they're in this, you know, the second to fourth grade is that transition from childhood to adolescence. And they're going from the magical thinking brain, where everything is still possible, in the world for them to the more adolescent brain that is starting to become more grounded and aware of society and allows society to put limitations on them. And if we can get them at that time where they haven't allowed society to impose these ideas and views, then there is so much more potential for them to push past. You know, I hate saying that women break glass ceilings because I don't believe in ceilings. I don't even want girls to think about ceilings.
I agree. Why would you? 1,000%. Yep.
Yeah. So tell me about some of the projects that you guys do, or take me through the experience of the Waverly Project. Is this a one-day thing? Is it, you know, talk to us about that.
Yeah. So initially when I started off, I started with a group of fourth grade girls, five of them. We went from five to like 150 in 4 years. And we're just dealing with one, community in Connecticut. So I'm working on building the, spreading out into schools actually in the next year. But, so we started taking a group of fourth grade girls in. I created these experiences, through museums. I would take them to a park and walk around and talk about, the different, foliage and the different plants and sort of like the history of that park and so, engross them in that experience and really connect them to where we were. So I would do parks. I would take them to a restaurant and introduce them to a chef, and the chef would tell them, okay, so, I actually grew up cooking with my mom. Or I never cooked until I turned 18. And then I found this passion. You know, the stories are so significant because we all have a story. Mm-hmm. And I think you can take pieces of other people's stories and apply them to your own life. And that really empowers you to move forward in whatever you love or whatever you're sort of searching for. So we started with those travel experiences, and that whole process sort of illuminated me to, create this curriculum, that is now a workshop that goes from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And I've basically taken pieces of those travel experiences and recreated them in a studio setting. So I will use a theme. I'm really, really focused on global awareness and exposing kids to cultures from all around the world, because that's where we all came from, to a certain extent. I know mm-hmm. that sounds a little out there, but
no, I agree.
We all are connected, and I think it's really important to expose kids to that at a young age, because that also starts that whole empathy movement, and mm-hmm. it really allows us to understand each other as human beings. So I use countries and traveling as sort of the umbrella of every workshop, and girls receive a Waverly passport. And so every workshop we talk about a certain country, and then that country goes into our environmental conversation, our DIY, design craft conversation, and our girl code conversation. So those are my three touch points: my environmental, like the world and the earth and how important that is, and how that fits into whatever country we're talking about. The craft and the DIY is the tangible, innovative experience that the girls really get to just be themselves and create something for themselves based on whatever we're talking about. So they get to sort of have that inspiring process. And then we do a girl code conversation that is always around our Waverly Way, which is really this value system that I've created that, it's like, it's basic. I didn't create it. I just put it together from what exists already, but You know, how important smiling is, how important trusting each other is, how individually different and amazing we each are, how being kind really matters. So it's this whole sort of notion of how to treat each other as you grow up. Because I think that we've lost that sort of respect and understanding of how you know, we are really all connected and we all matter. And I think we've just really created a very competitive world, especially in the United States. I can't speak as much for other countries, but I do know that the United States on either coast, and I'm sure it goes on, you know, all over. But from what I've seen and what I can speak to is that we have put a lot of pressure on kids and expectations for college and for jobs. And the truth of the matter is, and or at least for me is, you know, not every kid maybe is supposed to go to a liberal arts school. We've sort of, you know, pigeonholed, I think, kids, and it's doing a huge disservice to our culture and to the world, because kids are finding themselves at 22 years old, 25 years old, 30 years old, and they're like, what the heck am I doing? This is, I'm not connected to what I'm doing. And I think if you're not connected to what you're doing, then your work is not going to be as good. You're not, you know, your life is going to look a lot different. So the workshops are really, they're really focused on exposing girls to all sorts of different crafts and professions and senses, you know, sensory things that will somehow ignite this fire that lives inside of them and connect them to things that they care about and love, that will sort of put them on this sort of passion journey, paired with confidence, so that they say, you know, like your daughter was dancing, so that when they're like in high school and they're at a concert because they love music, they're going to dance because they're confident enough to know that this is their thing. And no matter what, like, you know, they're sort of committed to pursuing who they are and what they love as individuals. And they don't care what people think, you know? And, so I think the Waverly Way paired with these creative workshops is really sort of allowed girls to be themselves and create and also learn at the same time how important it is to treat people well and respect who they are and who other people are as well, you know?
Yeah. I love that. And so much resonates with me in so many ways. You know, first of all, you're creating a safe space for girls to come together.
Yeah.
And there's so much competition. I see, you know, I'm Latina and I was born in Spain. So English is my second language. And so I've experienced multiple cultures and you're, you know, at least from my experience, you're spot on that the US has created this culture of competition, and it's very academic driven and it's very money driven. There is a huge drive, for money. And I don't have a problem with drive for money, because I think, you know, on a business standpoint, I think it's our duty as women to make as much money as possible, because we can do good with money, because money is an energy.
It's a tool.
It's a tool to drive change. And so whether that's, you know, through donating to others or, you know, driving politics in a way that you want it to go, it's important. But girls need to have this space where they can come together in an environment that is trusting and where girls can be vulnerable with each other and mm-hmm. learn to lean on each other for companionship, for friendship, and to see themselves as allies to each other so that, you know, you're walking down the street and you feel unsafe and you see another woman that you feel comfortable enough to say to her, someone's following me or something's wrong, and she'll help you. Or to trust in your girlfriends. And, you know, motherhood, when you become a mom one day, you need your community of women to help you, yeah. not just for yourself, but to help you with your own children. And we don't have that here yep. in the U.S. And in terms of, you know, academics, I was always very artistic. I wasn't a child that asked for a lot though. So I would have loved to have played the piano. I would have loved to take dance. I would have loved to take more art classes, but, I grew up from a mindset of lack. And I was the oldest and I never asked for things, because I didn't want my parents to say no, that they didn't have the money or put them in a position that would be uncomfortable for them to say no. So I never asked. And when it came time to figure out where I was going to go to school at 17 years old, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? My gosh, 17, I had no idea who I was. And I hadn't been able to experience very much. And I wanted to do something in the arts. And my parents were kind of like, you won't make money in the arts. And so
I had the same conversation.
Yeah. And so I went to medicine, and because that was another passion of mine. And I learned that medicine's actually very artistic. You have to be an artist to be someone that works in medicine, especially in like trauma. So I worked as a critical care paramedic.
Wow.
So I did trauma on the street, 911, and I did interfacility transports, which means I would take patients from hospitals that were very, very critical. They didn't have the facilities or the capabilities of caring for them, and transport them to mine and try to stabilize them en route. And so you had to become very creative in how you would manage every single case in patient care, because trauma is messy. And that was very rewarding experience for me. And I had my first career pivot where an accident on the job ended that career. And it was kind of a wake up moment. You know, this is dangerous. I love it, but my heart wasn't fully in it. And so I became an entrepreneur, and I had my first daughter, and I had postpartum depression, and my husband was an avid amateur photographer. And he was like, I want you to learn how to use a camera. I want you to learn to take photographs. And I was like, there's no way. That's numbers. You're talking to me about, like, you know, ISO and shutter speed and all of these numbers. And he's a computer science guy, right? So I saw his numbers. I was like, I don't do numbers. We argued about this. And finally I was like, fine. And he taught me how to use a camera.
Oh, I love
it. And the rest was history. And so I was a photographer for 8 years.
Oh my gosh.
And
I just got the chills.
That's what led me to this, because what I've learned is, you know, I played with everything, and photography allowed me to tell stories of how I saw the world through my lens. And I focused a lot at the beginning in motherhood, and my images were very dark and moody, because that's what motherhood was like for me. Mm-hmm. It was dark, it was moody, it was lonely, it was scary. And there were very few light moments for me at times. Mm-hmm. But also the intimate connection between mother and child and that bond. And so my photographs never really had a lot of eye contact with me, because that wasn't important. And then my girls started getting older, and I started coming out of that motherhood funk, and I started finding my own. And so my work shifted towards photographing girls and teens and tweens through their extracurriculars. So pre-professional dancers and equestrians and gymnasts. And I'd approach the situation in each session asking the girls, so you're a ballerina. What does that look like to you? And they'd look at me and be like, what are you asking? Nobody's ever asked me that. And I said, well, show me what society says you look like as a ballerina. And so they'd put on the big pancake tutu and the hair up and the makeup. And then I'd say, but what is being a dancer look like to you?
I love that.
And it was really interesting, because to them, it was athletic. It was multifaceted. You know, girls would show up with high top sneakers and a tutu, and you know, it was sporty, and some of them, you know, was grungy, and it was not this idea of what society had placed on them. And then I realized, you know, a little over a year ago, that tool that I had as a photographer had brought me to where I am now, and my mission. And my mission has always been girl empowerment, woman empowerment. It's been about helping moms to break cycles and patterns of behavior and parenting that might not be so healthy for empowering girls, or creating this handbook, this community of women supporting women and helping each other, because I needed that when I became a mom. I needed people to tell me, like, how do I do this? How do I raise a powerful girl? How do I empower her at 1 or 3 or 10 or 15 to not have all these self-esteem or body image issues or confidence issues that I'm still working through myself in my 30s because I want global change. And then we talk about this big picture, because I've always been a big picture believer. I've always been told my ideas were too big.
Same.
I think too worldly. Oh, you're dreaming. And I love to dream, because
me too.
We want girls to be dreamers.
Yep.
And because those dreamers that are empowered are a force to be reckoned with.
They are.
They will be the change that we need to see.
Yep.
But it came through art. And I love what you're doing, because sometimes we need a tool to help us find our mission, to help us find our why to start, and then go from there. And any career that you have, in order to be successful, needs to be passion driven. Ask any heart surgeon, any neurosurgeon, any really, you know, spectacular marketing expert, or an entrepreneur, or a CEO, because in order to be really good at something and successful, you need to be able to ride the swells.
You
do. Because there are so many highs and so many lows, and you cannot come out of those lows unless you're really passionate about what you're doing. And we need to teach girls to be able to ride those waves.
It's true. And I think this has been my biggest frustration with, you know, I'm not a parent yet, but I deal with parents all the time, and you can't manufacture passion.
No.
So you're doing such a disservice if you don't allow your child to embrace who they are, not who you think they should be or who you want them to be, but truly surrendering to who they are as a child. And I am so with you that, you know, when you are passionate, that passion takes you to heights you could never, ever achieve. And so if there's a fear of the child not being successful or not, it's irrelevant, because if the passion is there, then the ambition will be there. Mm-hmm. The grit and the courage and the perseverance, like all of those things that you need to achieve success, to, you know, whatever that means to you. It's obviously different across the board, but, I think that, you know, the tools that get you there are tools that, a lot of times happen to be creative, and they, you know, whether it's writing or, and journaling, or photography is one for me too. Like, that's a new passion of mine, and I can't imagine my life without it now. But I also sew, and I love to bake, and, you know, there's all these sort of, I like to use the word sensory, because I think we have five senses, and we like to, they, you know, everyone sort of appeals to different ones, and it's important to massage those out and sort of figure out which ones appeal to you. And that really allows you to connect with who you are, and that gives you confidence. You know, when you can say, oh my God, like I now know the lingo behind photography, and I can carry my camera around and know how to, you know, compose like a great shot or whatever, all these things. It's and to me, when you have that self-confidence, that's what changes the world. You know, when you're brave enough to say, hey, I don't think this is right, or I'm gonna maybe make this a little better, or, you know, let's work together and see what we can do individually and collectively to change this or whatever, you know. And I think that like per your whole supporting each other, like I care about authentic support, like truly like vulnerable, like let's just say it how it is support. And I think the world needs more of that. And you have to expose kids to that from a young age for them to understand what it means to really be vulnerable and really be transparent and safe and trusting. You know, I mean, those are things that you have to learn. It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah. And you know, the same as, you know, mothers can do this with their girls every day. And I've done it with my daughters. It's funny because they know I was a paramedic. They call me a hospital person. Mommy was a hospital person. And they know because it's come up in other aspects of my life, where I've constantly helped people in our family and our friends with medical situations and issues. But my daughters don't play house. They play entrepreneur.
Oh.
And because that's what they've seen. But I've also let them see the dark side of what it is I'm doing. And that for me and for my girls has been, you know, them coming in. I share an office with my husband who works from home when he's not traveling. And they've seen me have hit some of those bottoms of the swells of the wave. And it's been sad. It's been me being angry. It's been me being frustrated. They've seen me cry over it. I remember one day my daughter came in, and she came in and sat on one of the beanbag chairs I have sitting in the office, because we've got table space. If I'm not on a meeting, I allow them to come and work with me. And I was having one of those I need to unleash to my husband. And so he was just sitting holding space for me, and I was ranting and getting upset and, you know, sharing my frustrations, and I started to cry. And, my oldest just sat there and kind of watched and listened and was taking it all in. And afterwards she was like, wow, Mom, that was a really great speech. And we both laughed, and she was like, you okay? Like, what was that about? And I said, yes. I said, you know, Daddy was doing this really great thing for me. He was holding space for me. And sometimes when we have like all of this stuff going on in our brain, and we really are passionate about something, we really love something, and so, you know, the work that Mommy's doing, Mommy loves it, not just for herself, but because she can help people with it. But there's days that things just don't work for me the first time or the second time or the third time. And I get so frustrated, and I get so upset, and I get so sad, because it's hard. Mm-hmm. And it's hard when it doesn't work out, that I just need to tell someone about it. And she's like, well, are you going to stop doing your work? And I was like, no, I'm not going to give up. But this is what it looks like sometimes, Alexa. Sometimes it's so hard.
Yep.
But when you feel like what you're doing is so important, whether that's working at soccer or math problem in school or a friendship, sometimes there's parts of it that are hard and they're messy and they're ugly. You just need to have someone you can tell about it, so that, you know, Daddy gave me like some really great suggestions while I was talking to him about it. And so now I can sit and I'll write in my journal about those suggestions. And I'm probably going to take a bath tonight and go to bed early and take care of myself. And we bring in the self-care, and tomorrow is a new day. And Mommy's going to look at those ideas that Daddy gave her and I'm going to contact a couple of my friends, you know, that are in, that do businesses like Mommy, and I'm going to come up with another new plan, an idea. And I want her to see that, because when I became an entrepreneur, I thought that I really sucked at it, because there were so many days that were suckier than were good.
Totally.
And until I found a group of women that were able to be authentic and compassionate and vulnerable and say, no, girlfriend, this is what it's like. I thought there was something wrong with me, because with social media, with society, all we are showing is the pretty picture, the final result, the end, the outcome. And what we're not showing is the grit, the drive, the tears, the screams, the anger, you know, the joy that comes in sporadically, that are part of that process.
Amen.
And they need going. To see that. They need to see that process.
100 That is like my like total sort of, I don't know what you would call it, like flag. I so agree with you. And I crave, I think we all crave authenticity and transparency. And I think that the social media has brought us to this place where we're like, enough, you know, like I want to feel what's real and see what's real and have friends and a community of people that like want to talk about the good and the bad, because life has both. Like you said, there's ups and downs, it ebbs and flows. And, I think that instilling that and exposing kids to even the process for an hour and a half of figuring out that maybe your project doesn't work out. Maybe it breaks. Maybe your idea, you know, decides maybe midway, this happens all the time, midway through a project, you know, a girl's like, oh, I actually want to do this. I'm like, totally do it. Like, let's shift it, because guess what? I have to shift my business model every 6 months. Like all of these things that, you know, real life living is so important it's so important to expose kids to that, because it gives them that sort of sensibility that gets through the tough times and then is ecstatic and grateful and thankful when it's good, you know? And so I think that's sort of that's the beautiful marriage that really does allow for change, right? When you're like grateful and excited to help and participate and bless no matter what you're doing, you know? And then when times are hard, you learn from them, you gain a new, you know, a new way of seeing the world, and you grow deeper, and then you're allowed, you know, you are then, you know, you then can impart that or share with someone else. And so that's sort of like the beautiful truths about life that, we need to see all aspects of them, you know, in order to really be able to, participate and contribute. And so Waverly is all about exposing girls to exactly what you've been talking about. This whole conversation is just giving them the truths of creativity, of values, of culture, exposing them to that whole sort of wave that connects your own gifts, your own contributions, your own story. And then you can then, you know, go out into the world and be who you were made to be, you know? And I do think that social media, you know, I feel like we always harp on social media. There's a lot of amazing things about it. And you have to know how to navigate it correctly. and for that to then trickle down into your children and have them navigate it well. And, you know, but the downside, it, you know, one of the downsides are that I think kids are just forgetting. They're not truly understanding that process of, suffering and, or not suffering, but you know, that sounds a little bit aggressive, but going through something hard, you know, life is not this perfect picture and it's not a filter and you can't filter life. You can't, maybe you can for a certain, you know, to a certain extent, and then you're going to hit a huge wall that's going to be really awful. But so I think we need more and more programs and experiences and workshops that allow for children to really sort of gain these tools that technology has kind of removed.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. Like a girl that falls in love with gardening might in 20 years become a scientist that can actually come up with a plant or system or something to grow food in an area.
Correct.
That has never been able to grow food before and solve a hunger issue. You know, there's so much potential, but if she hadn't fallen in love with gardening, or maybe she found a way to save our bees, you know, we think as adults academically and money based. And I think what we need to do is let children explore and touch and feel and immerse themselves in all of these amazing things. And then they find their passion of what they love and they will turn that into a mission-based career.
Bingo.
That will change
the world.
The world.
Yep.
And that's and what we want.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I always use this thing. There's 8 forms of wealth. There's, you know, your obvious financial wealth. There's health wealth. There's family wealth. There's friendship wealth. There's academic wealth. You know, educational wealth, I would say. We prioritize in the United States, I would say, like our top 3 are wealth, like wealthy wealth, as in wealth, probably health and academic. And academic in, like, there's so many other forms of wealth is my point. Like, we need to expand and open our minds up a bit more. And say to ourselves, you know, like you said, if my kid may, you know, my kid may not be the top kid in the class, but guess what? They, you know, that these other gifts are there, and we're gonna figure out what they are, and encourage and affirm and support and believe in them. And like you said, that young kid who fell in love with plants could end up curing a disease via plant-based in 30 years, you know, and why would you want to narrow the possibility by having them fit into something that society says is, because there's so much more and we have to stop limiting these kids. We have to.
I agree. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It was awesome. I love the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
It's so powerful. And I'll let our listeners know where they can find out more about you.
Sounds good. Thanks.
More information on Molly Wills and the Waverly Project can be found at www.thewaverlyproject.com. To hear the rest of this interview as we continue the enlightening conversation, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million-dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details. Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.